Pushkin.
Where do you see your career in 10 years? What are you doing now to help you get there? The sooner you start enhancing your skills, the sooner you'll be ready. That's why AARP has reskilling courses in a variety of categories like marketing and management to help your income live as long as you do. That's right. AARP has a bevy of free skill-building courses for you to choose from because the steps you choose to take today will help you love what you do in the future. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/skills.
The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're really choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers.
Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies.
Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
If you took a COVID test recently, you probably took it at home. And if you tested positive, you probably didn't report the results to your local health department, which, you know, fair enough, no judgment. But in the big picture, this does create a problem. How do we keep track of COVID levels as public testing declines? How do we look out for new variants? How do we monitor new outbreaks? The answer, in a word, is poop. I'm Jacob Goldstein, and this is What's Your Problem? My guest today is Mariana Matus, co-founder and CEO of BioBot Analytics. The company analyzes sewage samples from hundreds of water treatment plants across the U.S. and Canada. They provide an aggregate picture of the COVID status of tens of millions of people. Mariana's problem is this. How do you move beyond COVID to turn raw sewage into data that can help improve global public health? As it's become clear that sampling sewage is one of the best ways to track the COVID pandemic, the field of wastewater epidemiology has become a big deal. But when Mariana discovered the field, it wasn't particularly popular or flashy. It was years before the pandemic when she was working on her PhD in computational biology at MIT. But Mariana told me, studying wastewater seemed like a great fit for what she wanted to do.
When I came across the space of wastewater epidemiology through my laboratory, it was perfect, I think, for me as a combination of cutting edge science, but also like a very big societal impact.
When you imagined having a big societal impact through your study of wastewater epidemiology, like what did you imagine? What was like your big dream?
I grew up in Mexico City and in a very sort of like slummy part of Mexico City, not on the nice part of Mexico City. So I grew up basically with zero government resources, in areas that are ignored and that don't receive any sort of like government resources. And I grew up thinking that life was like that. And then my career took me to study in great universities and places, in the Netherlands, in the UK, in Boston. And then I just began to realize that it's not like that. Not every place is like that. And to me, I think like the more that I dug into it through my PhD studies, like I realized that a big part of the solution starts with collecting the data to demonstrate those health disparities that, I know that are out there. And everybody sort of like knows that are out there, but it's just hard to really take action when you just don't have it in your face and don't have a way to measure progress. So what I would imagine is how can we use the data from the wastewater to give everybody a voice and to create maps of what's happening near real time everywhere, and to design action around that data.
How did you go from that initial kind of big dream to starting a company?
So when I came to MIT, it's sort of like I had all these dreams in my head about like, oh, imagine using science to, you know, just impact society. Wouldn't that be amazing? But I didn't know what that meant in practice. And when I came to MIT, I discovered entrepreneurship.
Entrepreneurship, uh-huh.
Yes. I mean, just like the concept that anybody can be a founder and start their own company, right? Like just that concept, believe it or not. I mean, I just didn't know about that before I came to MIT. I always thought, oh, only people that already have family money or like, you know, that studied business for undergrad, they are the ones who can start businesses. And just that concept completely blew my mind. And I think it was for me like the missing piece. I realized, oh, wow, well, that's how I do it. That's how I create a company based on science to go and solve a big problem.
One thing I heard you talking about in another interview was when you were starting the company, people seemed to misunderstand and think that you should be starting a nonprofit instead of a company. Is that right? And if so, can you tell me about that?
Absolutely. So the idea of selling to government, the idea of operating in the space of public health, and the idea of having two women co-founders out of MIT, basically two very technical women co-founders, kind of, it was a kind of a perfect trifecta for investors to think about us as a nonprofit.
You mentioned gender. You mentioned the fact that that you and your co-founder are both women and that played into it. How did that work? What was going on there?
Yeah, it seemed that I had to be very proactive about kind of explaining I'm doing this not just to have public impact, not just to have a social impact. I'm doing this because I'm also looking to have a financial outcome. And I just found it funny that I had to be saying like, hey, I want to make money. Like, you know, I personally also want to make money. Why wouldn't I?
Right. So, okay. So you found the company. So let's jump to say 2019, like beginning of 2020 now. You have this little company that's been up and running for a couple years. It's analyzing wastewater, but you have no revenue. You have a staff of just like 5 people. You built this little machine that goes into the sewer to collect sewage. And you're working on one pilot project, and that project isn't even for infectious disease, right? You're looking at opioids. You're sort of studying the opioid epidemic. And yet this is this moment when history is like barreling towards you, right? This pandemic is about to, you know, change everything, right? And so I'm curious, when did you start to hear about, you know, about this new coronavirus outbreak?
Yeah, I think for us, it really began to catch our attention in like early 2020, like January 2020.
Do you remember any particular moments, any particular conversations or reading anything or talking to anybody?
I mean, definitely. So some of those like first conversations that happened where we had been forming a relationship with folks within HHS, like the federal HHS.
Department of Health and Human Services, the big federal.
The Department of Health and Human Services, yeah. In DC. So I remember we were in DC in February of 2020, basically like already pitching that we should begin to test the wastewater of all of the major airports across the country to start getting a sense of the level of import. And we were told, well, this outbreak is going to be contained within 2 weeks. So it would be a waste of your resources to try to develop a solution around this now, because you're not going to be ready in less than 2 weeks.
They were like, by the time you figure out how to do this test in a few weeks, this whole thing's going to have blown over. It's not going to matter.
Exactly. So, but despite that sort of like very strong feedback, we came back from DC and this was February of 2020, and we make the decision that we were going to build a COVID solution based on the wastewater.
And tell me about building that.
We had to basically change everything. We had to throw away sort of like all of the progress that we had made up until that point to start over, given the constraints at hand. Number one, there was a sense of emergency, and that time was of the essence. So the idea of having to manufacture hardware in order to collect data at scale just seemed pretty hard or impossible in that moment. Also, uh-huh. You know, the supply chain issues, all of
that. You're not going to be able to make this special device. You're not going to be able to make 1,000 of them in a couple of months or whatever.
Exactly, exactly. So we decided, okay, how else can we get wastewater easily? Uh-huh. And we realized, oh, actually there are 16,000 wastewater treatment plants in the U.S., covering 80% of the U.S. population. And turns out most of them already have a similar type of equipment. So it's not portable, it's not as sophisticated, but it does the job at collecting that continuous 24-hour sample.
Uh-huh. The minimum viable product already exists at 16,000 wastewater plants all across the U.S.
So we were like, okay, check.
Okay.
Second was the lab component. We had been building a chemistry platform, and obviously, and COVID is caused by an RNA virus. Okay. So the detection or the test in the lab would need to be more of a molecular biology type of approach. We didn't have any of those capabilities, but we had just raised a seed round, a $4.2 million seed round. And so we had some money to just start getting some basic new equipment in the lab. And also we have a good relationship with my PhD advisor at MIT. So together with him, we actually used a lot of his lab early on in the pandemic and collaborated with his students. So, you know, that's how we got started. And it took us like 4 weeks to just go from the decision point until having actually not just the proof that the test works with wastewater, but also we wrote a scientific preprint, like
a paper.
So yeah. We were the first ones in the country to demonstrate that you can detect and quantify the virus causing COVID-19 in wastewater samples and that it works well. And I think, you know, it was just from there that everything exploded.
I mean, is there fear? I assume that there's no risk of transmitting the disease. I mean, it's obviously not transmitted through wastewater, but were people afraid that it might be? We didn't know anything about COVID at the time. I mean, this is when I was still wiping off all my groceries with bleach, right? Because literally we didn't know.
Oh, yes. There was a lot of concern. And actually that was, you know, thank you for, I feel like my brain probably like tried to forget that, but uh-huh. that was a very big deal. Like when we just started for many reasons. Nobody knew if the virus present in wastewater would be infectious. My very small team that we had, they were really afraid to have to handle the wastewater sample without knowing if they can get infected.
Yeah.
So we came up with a solution for our lab where every bottle of wastewater sample that arrives to BioBot is first pasteurized in order to basically make it non-infectious or like sterile.
Yes.
And the third thing was that I was just pregnant at the time. I became pregnant in March of 2020, my first pregnancy, my first, you know, baby. And my husband and I also would go into the lab to model to the rest of our team that, you know, this is safe. Like, you know, I'm pregnant, but I trust that the pasteurization is good enough to make this work safe, and let me demonstrate that with my actions.
Yeah.
At the time, it was a very big deal.
So you have this idea, you have the proof that it works. You've convinced the staff at your company at BioBot that it's okay to do this. How do you get customers? What happens next?
So we designed a pro bono campaign where BioBot would absorb the cost of all of the testing for 2 months. And what happened, it was beyond our wildest dreams. Like, it exploded. It got picked up by the media. People loved this idea that you can fight COVID with poop.
With poop, yeah.
Yeah, you can fight COVID with poop, you know. That was basically the message being put out there. It went viral. And we got, in just the first 10 days or so of announcing the campaign, we got 400 plants nationwide wanting to enroll in the program. We had aspired to enroll up to 100. So it was crazy. The response was just crazy. But, you know, that transition was tough because I guess also something that I haven't talked about is that in that early 2020 stage when we were the first ones, the more established academics were skeptical and basically like recommending caution with these and slowing things down for us. And so it was a very,
Were they skeptical of wastewater sampling in general? Or were they skeptical of your company? Or was it both?
Both. So up until 2020, the wastewater epidemiology was a very niche and obscure area of science. So the entire field was a little bit like, you know, not very well known, obviously. And if that was within science, just imagine within government, you know, like it was just, nobody was saying, oh, I need wastewater data. Like, who can provide it for me?
Why do you think that is? I mean, do you think it's partly like because it's poop, because it's sewage? Like, why do you think people were ignoring this source of data? Really? I mean, is it because it's poop and people are kind of embarrassed by it, don't like to talk about it? Like, has that been a barrier to you?
I mean, I think that actually people love all of the poop jokes and poop humor. Okay. I feel like that actually tends to be like a plus.
How do you feel about them at this point? Like, are you tired of them? Do they work in your favor? Like, are poop jokes like enough? I never want to hear a poop joke again.
No. I love it. And our company culture, you know, celebrates the poop humor quite a lot with our you know, branding and swag. And, you know, we love it.
Big users of the poop emoji, or they're like particular,
very big. Oh yeah. The poop emoji is the most used emoji in the BioBot Slack.
That makes sense. I mean, it's widely used even at places that have nothing to do with poop, right? So.
Yes. No, I think that, you know, I think that the barrier to research and to, you know, first to research and then to the adoption of the data is just that the bar to get the data in is very high, in the sense that there's a lot of operational and logistical work in order to get data. So when you are working within a university or within a government agency, who really has the time to be, you know, building kits to transport wastewater, learning how to, the regulations to transport it, going out there or finding the relationships to send you the wastewater in, doing all of that grunt work in the lab, right?
Grunt work, right? It's very logistical. It's not like high-minded. It's not fancy math. It's just getting the poop to the lab. And
Exactly. So when I was a PhD student at MIT, I was basically like the only one like willing to do the grunt work. Because I started working on wastewater epidemiology during my PhD. That's what my PhD thesis was about. But, you know, I really struggled with just like recruiting a team around me, because folks were wanting to help with the data analysis, the data visualization, but not the 80% groundwork that goes behind it. So
nobody wanted to go get the poop.
Exactly. So that's why I always thought, you know, if this science is going to really go mainstream, it needs an organization dedicated like 100% to it, so that we can do that groundwork. And then the scientists, yes, of course, the power is in the data, in the insights that you can get out of it. But, you know, there's an 80% groundwork behind it.
Well, I mean, maybe that's part of the case for a for-profit company, right? Like, profit is a very good incentive to do grunt work.
Absolutely.
Oh, how big is the company now?
Oh, yeah. BioBot now has 100 employees.
How much revenue do you have, more or less?
This year, we are on track to make over $20 million in revenue.
Okay.
Which is great also to be here, given that 2 years ago, we were basically pre-revenue. So
yes, 2 years ago, it was zero. From zero to 20 million is a lot. Are you profitable?
No, not yet. I mean, we are investing heavily in our R&D so that we can look at other types of data.
So, story so far. 3 years ago, Mariana barely had a company, and wastewater surveillance was this little niche thing in the U.S. And then, by the beginning of this year, when the Omicron wave hit the country, BioBot was this big, real company. Wastewater surveillance was one of the most important tools public health officials used to figure out where cases were spiking so that they could direct resources into the right neighborhoods and you know, plan for surges in hospital admissions. And the story is not over. In a minute, what we still don't know about poop and disease. It's a lot. You probably think it's too soon to join AARP, right? Well, let's take a minute to talk about it. Where do you see yourself in 15 years? More specifically, your career, your health, your social life. What are you doing now to help you get there? There are tons of ways for you to start preparing today for your future with AARP. That dream job you've dreamt about? Sign up for AARP reskilling courses to help make it a reality. How about that active lifestyle you've only spoken about from the couch? AARP has health tips and wellness tools to keep you moving for years to come. But none of these experiences are without making friends along the way. Connect with your community through AARP volunteer events. So it's safe to say it's never too soon to join AARP. They're here to help your money, health, and happiness live as long as you do. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/wisefriend. Okay, 10 seconds. How many things can you name that are always growing? The universe, easy one. My kids, so far. To-do lists. This month, my sugar snap peas. I know that's not always. I know I'm out of time, but I'm going to give you one more. Businesses on Shopify. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. There are key moments in every endeavor. I ask pretty much everybody I interview on this show about their key moments, their breakthroughs, their failures, their turnarounds, and Shopify can be there for you at all of your key moments. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/problem. Go to shopify.com/problem now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/problem. If you're listening to this podcast right now and you're a small business owner, listen up. Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're actually choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers. They do everything from hyper-targeting best fit prospects through campaign optimization. Upswell Marketing's unique approach includes direct mail, search engine marketing, and social media ads, and has fueled more than 10,000 small business success stories. Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies. Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com. Now, back to the show. And one thing I'm curious about, well, what is your company's moat, right? Like, how is what you do not just some commodity thing that anybody with a lab can do?
Yeah, I think that that's a great question. Anybody out there could go and, let's say, open a manhole and get a bucket in, pull up wastewater, take it to a lab, and they would get a number.
a number meaning like an amount of COVID that's in there or something.
Yeah, you may get an amount of COVID, you may get an amount of opioids, an amount of influenza, right? Like any number, you may get a number. But what does that number mean? Like that number in isolation really doesn't mean anything. So our secret sauce is how do we make wastewater a data platform? And that really means it's a systems level type of design and product. We actually need to use the same method in every sample if we want to calculate, if we want to compare across time, if we want to compare across locations, if we want to build a statewide trend, if we want to compare regions, if we want to calculate a national average, it's imperative to actually use the same methods at every stage for every sample. Otherwise, you don't have that comparability.
Yes.
Wastewater, again, the power of the wastewater isn't about about the number that you get from a single wastewater sample. The power of wastewater is about having that bird's eye view, that systems level view of what's happening in an entire country, in an entire state. You can drill in more geographically narrow, but you can also zoom out. That's the platform. That's the power that we're building. So in order to accomplish that, you know, that's where we come in. All of the relationships, all of the scale, that 80%, you know, groundwork that I talked about to accomplish that level of visibility. That's a tough problem.
So it's like a network effect. There's a network effect thing. People would want to use your company because you have the most data and therefore you have the best understanding of what one particular sample means because you can put it in the context of all the other data that you have processed.
Exactly. So we have the largest network of sites in the world. It's mostly US, some Canada.
How big is it now?
We have over 500 sites.
What's something you haven't figured out yet? What's a problem you're still trying to figure out how to solve? Maybe you've tried it, it hasn't quite worked yet. What's something you're still working on?
In the lab, there is a lot of interest in looking at different targets. So not just COVID, but also influenza, norovirus. Uh-huh. You can, the list keeps going, right? Like monkeypox, we're right now in advanced R&D for monkeypox. We're going to start testing wastewater for monkeypox too. But it remains a challenge to know kind of which types of data we can collect and how to interpret them. Because we don't really know which pathogens are shed in poop.
Huh. That's surprising. I would think people would just sort of have figured that out by now. Does that go back to the fact that it's kind of an understudied area?
Exactly. There's a lot of information about how you can diagnose a disease in a person via like a serum sample, via
a blood test.
A blood test or maybe a swab or like a nasal swab or a saliva swab.
Yeah.
Sometimes in pee, but poo, I mean, why would they have to? I mean, the clinic, you don't
It's like the worst way to get us do a sample for the doctor, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So for the doctor, again, poop is an understudied, sort of like diagnostic matrix.
Yeah.
So, one wild dream of mine is for us to develop the clinical collaborations to be able to know in people, how different diseases are shedding in poop, because that will help us to understand which targets will be easier to track via the wastewater and how to interpret it.
You mentioned sort of starting out in the field with this dream of being able to look at a city like Mexico City and get, sort of a map of what's going on with the health of people in the city. How do you get to there from where you are now?
Because we have done some pilots in Mexico, Ecuador, Uruguay, in partnership already with the World Bank. So, it's kind of how do we build on top of those early pilots that were very successful?
So you sample, you know, big sewage systems. In the U.S., that allows you to capture something like 80% of the population. But it seems like in large parts of the developing world, you have places, you know, that are less developed where there are not sewage systems. What do you do there?
There's many areas that don't have any sort of sanitation.
Right.
So I think that for those areas, there's just immediate action, which is we can use basically the same type of sampling approaches to open sewers, like basically which are rivers where the waste makes it into the river. And that is possible. That works. That's how some people already do wastewater epidemiology work in areas without the infrastructure. But I think you are right that over time, this technology could be a new reason to invest in wastewater, in building the wastewater infrastructure where it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Because now we're giving it a second use, a second mission. This is no longer just about the collection and safe disposal of waste from people. This is about intelligence that you cannot really get in any other way. So hopefully it can be a virtuous cycle where it can foster the investment in the building of this infrastructure, which would only, of course, also improve public health, because then we'd reduce the spread of disease.
In a minute, the lightning round, with questions about immigration, entrepreneurship, and what not to flush down the toilet. You probably think it's too soon to join AARP, right? Well, let's take a minute to talk about it. Where do you see yourself in 15 years? More specifically, your career, your health, your social life. What are you doing now to help you get there? There are tons of ways for you to start preparing today for your future with AARP. That dream job you've dreamt about? Sign up for AARP reskilling courses to help make it a reality. How about that active lifestyle you've only spoken about from the couch? AARP has health tips and wellness tools to keep you moving for years to come. But none of these experiences are without making friends along the way. Connect with your community through AARP volunteer events. So it's safe to say it's never too soon to join AARP. They're here to help your money, health, and happiness live as long as you do. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/wisefriend. If you're listening to this podcast right now and you're a small business owner, listen up. Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're actually choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers. They do everything from hyper-targeting best fit prospects through campaign optimization. Upswell Marketing's unique approach includes direct mail, search engine marketing, and social media ads, and has fueled more than 10,000 small business success stories. Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies. Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com. And now a word from the show's sponsors at Betterment. Do you want your money to dream big? Do you want your money to be a total self-starter? Are you annoyed that your money doesn't work hard enough? Don't worry, Betterment is here to help. Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. The automated technology is built to help maximize returns, meaning when you invest with Betterment, your money can auto-adjust as you get closer to your goal, rebalance if your portfolio gets too far out of line, and your dividends are automatically reinvested. That can increase the potential for compound returns. In other words, your money is breaking a sweat while you can be breaking bread. You'll never picture your money the same way again. Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed. Now, back to the show. Let's do like a lightning round. I'm just going to ask you a bunch of fast questions, and you can answer them fast.
Sure.
Why do you think immigrants are more likely than native-born citizens to become entrepreneurs?
That's a good question. So I mean, I can only speak about my kind of experience, but at least in my case, I felt that a little bit like I had nothing to lose. So why not try? Like, why wouldn't I try?
What's one thing people should never, ever flush down the toilet?
Well, that's a great question. Never flush down the so-called flushable wipes.
Okay, not actually flushable, it turns out?
They are not actually flushable. They don't dissolve in water. So what happens is that they create this massive, big clog systems everywhere. The Q-tips are also pretty bad because the head size tends to be the same as like some of the sort of like filters that capture just like big junk out of the wastewater. So they also block those systems. So Q-tips are not great to flush either.
Okay. I've touched a nerve here.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
If everything goes well, what problem will you be trying to solve in 5 years?
Due to climate change, we can expect to see more infectious disease outbreaks than before in a more frequent manner. The patterns of, just wildlife, of insects, vector insects are just changing. And so we can expect to see more zoonotic events of infectious diseases jumping to humans. So in my opinion, I think that the next 5 to 10 years should be more about that international collaboration around health, understanding, what we do here won't be enough. We need to be connected. So I would love if we have been so successful at collecting, at building this data asset and having the trust of different governments that we can even begin to be part of that collaboration.
What's the most interesting thing you ever saw or pulled out of a sewer?
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's another good one. I didn't pull this myself, but we were touring one of the plants that we work with in Portland, Maine, just a few weeks ago. And they were telling us that they recently pulled the door of a car.
What?
I don't know what happened, but there was a door of a car that they had to pull out of the stream.
Mariana Matus is co-founder and CEO of BioBot Analytics. Today's show was produced by Edith Russolo, engineered by Amanda K. Wong, and edited by Robert Smith. I'm Jacob Goldstein, and we'll be back next week with another episode of What's Your Problem? How do you create present and future value? As a leading provider of specialized finance, operations, and technology advisory services for Fortune 500 companies, emerging growth market leaders, and private equity sponsors, cross-country consulting solves today's most pressing challenges and creates present and future enterprise value. With tailored, integrated solutions for accounting, risk, technology-enabled transformation, and transaction solutions, cross-country works as a strategic partner and collaborative part of your team. The future-ready business, insight and within reach. Go to crosscountry-consulting.com to learn more.
Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're really choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers.
Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies.
Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
Hey, it's Jacob. Did you know that you can listen to What's Your Problem on Amazon Music? And you can stream your favorite albums and artists in the app, so you can do all of your listening in one place. Plus, Amazon Prime members get access to ad-free podcasts from other podcast networks like Wondery and Amazon exclusive shows. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or just ask your Alexa device to play the podcast What's Your Problem on Amazon Music.